everybody. Welcome to Taking Stock. It is October 18th, a special Friday edition, and really excited today to be having on Guerrillionaire, who just has been an instrumental part of our scene behind the scene, helping to do pretty much from the ground up, building the database out of a personal project, a constant community member, just with unbridled enthusiasm, and has hopped right into this new GitHub like chapter where we're trying to do as much as we can with community input out in public, open source. And I'm just really excited today to finally get him here on the show. Needs to happen more often, I'd say, and hear a bit of the personal history, how you feel about the current dynamics, and what you think about the future direction. Thanks so much for taking the time, especially right after work, as I understand it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, just clocked out, ready to go.
Awesome. So maybe if you don't mind, just to start with, could you talk a bit about yourself and kind of how long you've been involved with our team and how you got involved in the start?
Absolutely. So yeah, like you mentioned, it started as a personal project. I just felt like I wanted to do my part in helping combat, what's going on Wall Street. And it just kind of sort of began with the top 100 Fortune 500 companies. It all started in a Google sheet, just the issuer name and the transfer agent. And that took about a few days, posted it on Reddit, got a good amount of karma. And that snowballed into me realizing, okay, there needs to be more, right? So that became the top 500 Fortune 500 companies. Added another column in there as well for if online purchasing is available. And that one took a few weeks. So it's just slowly been continually on to the next thing for me. I remember I posted that, got more karma on that one as well. And what was nice is I had a few people reach out when I posted that. I wanted to shout out to Put Psychological, 8698, and 6 days, 1 week for reaching out. We coordinated to getting phone numbers into that spreadsheet and email addresses for investor relations. And that's really when it started to become this much bigger project and something I was putting together myself. So from there, I remember PutSci invited me to the DRSGME Discord, which I was a little bit hesitant at first because I wasn't sure that I wanted to work with a lot of other people on this, especially since I was working under a pseudonym at the time. I felt like I wasn't sure if it would end up with me doxing myself, but I just, with it being more increasingly ambitious goals that included more data, I realized that I decided to join the Discord because I wanted to really help build this thing out more. And that's when I got to meet you, Jives. So it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, no, I remember it well. Those guys had posted your, you know, what you'd been working on before they sent along the invite. And it was so inspirational. I know that Bibik and myself were just really, really happy to see that there were other folks that were, taking big steps to provide tons of granular, important, primary information. And what's crazy, right, Guerrillionaire, because right now we're talking about this broader YBRS database that's what it's kind of become. We've had a lot of community input over the over the years since then. But you go on Google, right, and if you wanted to access some of this information, it's behind a paywall. And really, if you had more time, it's all publicly out there. It's just a matter of it being collated in one place. Everyone who puts this together decides that they should be selling it instead of providing it as a resource to investors. Did you realize that before you got started, or was that something you realized after you'd started to really add more features on to what was becoming the larger database?
I want to say after more features started being added on into the database is when I realized that this is like something that people just you have to pay to access this information. That's, you kind of hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, and it's incredible too, because at that time, as you mentioned, that was kind of the DRS GME group, because that was all before we'd launched YDRS. You know, we were talking about it. I think you came in that, you know, we'd kind of settled on that name. We'd already been building the site in the background, but that was several months, I think, before we actually launched the site, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I joined right before, I want to say a few weeks before you and Bibik and Miller spoke with Gary Gensler. And that's really the moment for me that was inspiring, to the point where I realized it was much bigger than myself, bigger than me just trying to gather all this data with a couple people. You know, it really kind of broadened the scope of the mission for me.
I gotcha. Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that. You know, it definitely was that kind of moment for us as well, I think, that that we were able to have that opportunity and talk a bit about, you know, DRS and about custody, you know, with someone who holds such an important office. Hopefully that, you know, that I'd love to have that opportunity again, especially now that we've done so much in the interim, which kind of brings, you know, to that transition into YDRS. I mean, it sounds like you say you posted initially on Reddit. Was that in GME communities mostly? Like, how do you feel about that transition of effort kind of moving away from wholly talking about one specific company and kind of talking more about broader systemic issues or broader, you know, a collection of data for all US stocks?
For me, it feels like a natural progression at this point. And it's personally, for me, it's been helpful in a way that I feel like I've learned a lot since starting a Google Sheet and not really knowing anything about coding or anything about GitHub. And like just helping with gathering more data and seeing the things that people, like the information that people ask for, and trying to help to gather that information, it's really pushed me. And that's also, I'm very thankful for that. You know, I feel like anyone who wants to help as well with this database, you know, it'll help them in that sense too, especially if they don't know or understand GitHub. It'll definitely be good for personal benefits as well.
When you say personal benefits, do you mean that kind of enrichment of understanding, or what else do you have in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Like enrichment of understanding. Yeah, like I said, especially with GitHub, I didn't really understand what it was about until more recently, but just I like the fact that it's a lot more decentralized and easier to collaborate with in that sense of anyone can make an account, just post if they have any ideas or anything along those lines. For me, I feel like I like that aspect of it.
Absolutely. Me too. I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm coming from the same place where I certainly knew what GitHub was, you know, for years already. Pop on there, look up some kind of open source project, download an exe or, well, you know, more or less. And they always say, you don't run exes on Windows, you download it off the internet. But I always figured, hey, if I'm downloading it from this project that's curated, even if I don't understand the component parts, I can still trust the process. But beyond that, I didn't really ever have a chance to use it until just in the last couple of months. And, you know, anyone listening probably, you know, may know, but we have started to transition a lot of the development efforts over to GitHub, just so that there's an opportunity for more organized collaboration as these features get built out and fleshed and improved. And so from a workflow perspective, I mean, this, we're talking about not only, you know, you're already swallowing so much more as this section of the project grew, but now we're talking about a whole new way to engage with it, like not only as an individual, but as a group. So I'm curious just to hear from you, your experience kind of adjusting to that and how you felt about that kind of while it was being discussed and, you know, through the early stages. And I know you said now you're happy with it, but, you know, what was that process of getting to this point like?
Definitely a lot of tireless nights where I would stay up and Google all these different companies, figuring out their transfer agents and phone numbers and all that. And I remember there was a point where I was on vacation in the Dominican Republic, and I was spending hours just trying to finish up that last 200 or 300 from the Fortune 500. And like, that's really, I didn't want to get burned out doing this by myself. So it's been very nice and very, I'm very appreciative of all these new people that are interested in helping. And I'm very appreciative of John as well with leading the efforts to really help organize this thing. And it's honestly reinvigorating just seeing all these different people putting their efforts in to help with this as well. So.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about it too. And it's necessary, right? So first off, I hadn't realized that you were plugging away. You said during a vacation. I mean, that's incredible devotion that you're displaying right there.
Thank you. Yeah, it was tough because like I said, I felt like everything was a little bit on me at that point. So just being able to like have other people to like rely on and bounce ideas off of, it's not just like, oh, it's everything, like this whole mission is like kind of my own, if that makes any sense.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, it was something that came out, it was an idea that you had to organize. And I remember, you know, coming to you hat in hand after we'd gotten to know each other a bit better and saying, hey, you know, this, I feel like this is right up the alley. Like, how would you feel about bringing it on board and try to get some more hands on this? And I'm so glad that you were interested in that and that we were able to expand things. Cause I mean, you know, there's 10 or 11,000 publicly traded US companies, right? So it's a big jump from even that, you know, from 50 to 100 to, well, to 10,000, the order of magnitude.
Yep. And it changes every day as well with companies getting delisted and new companies going public. So yeah, it's ever changing. It's a never ending project.
Yeah. I'd love to hear a bit more about that from you. So like, obviously that's true. There are companies that go enter some kind of bankruptcy or become delisted and go private, or of course companies IPO, and keeping up with all that data. Because, and not only to mention, right, like you said earlier, oh, I went from two columns to three columns, but now we've got, what is it, like 20 or 25 different data points that we're seeking to fill in with community engagement for each company. So there's massive growth here. And how do you, like, what are the tools that you found or had to build yourself to keep up with and manage that kind of growth?
Yeah, so I don't know if you remember with the Google Sheet where we had the shareable link that was public facing.
Sure.
And the issue that we ran into with using Google Sheets was that if too many people are trying to access it, Google doesn't like that. Google rate limits it. So it was maybe like a day or two where the site was just like not working. And I had to turn it into its own kind of website that pulls data from the Google Sheet. So that turned into the eth.link site that I had set up. And it was a very rudimentary table, black and white, nothing like what it looks like right now. But it was up, it was available, and it got the job done. So that, thankfully, is a little bit better now with filters and pages, and it's a lot more complex now. So it's like I said, never ending changes, always trying to improve, always seeing how we can make it look better, make it function better. And even just getting ideas from people, that's a big help, you know, like being able to think it through and like implement it, it definitely helps all of us at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this database, for those who need it, I mean, there's no other similar of the resource of this size that, to my knowledge, that's freely available and, you know, maintained thanks to, well, you haven't touched on it yet, but I'm curious to hear about the scraping solutions that you found and consistently improving, as you said. I mean, I remember those performance issues, and I'm not nearly as knowledgeable as you in some of these areas, but I could tell you it's wizardry to be able to go on there now. And there's 10,000 plus rows, but you type in a couple letters and you hardly have time to blink before you're fed back with whatever the results of your search are. It's incredible.
Thank you. I for the most part, I'm using Python to pull the data from the SEC website. Right now, it's mostly just pulling the issuer CIK number. I'm blanking out now. There's two more columns that it pulls from there, but it turns it into a database file on GitHub. And then from there, I'm able to use Fleek to essentially turn the database file gets turned into a JSON file. And then from there, Fleek pulls that data, turns it into an IPFS website. And that's what's linked to the database.ydrs.com site. So it's just a couple different tools that are linking together to get to what you see when you go to that website.
And it sounds like from the hierarchy you just described, at this point, we've pretty much moved past Google Sheets as a free host, is at least for that subsection of data. Is that right?
Yes and no. We still have the Google Sheet. It still pulls the columns from there as well, but it's bi-directional. So if something gets updated on the SEC website, it gets pushed down to the Google Sheet as well as GitHub. And if someone updates the Google Sheet, that gets pushed to the main database, GitHub, database.ydrs.org site. But it's a lot less frequent now. It used to be every 1 hour. Now it's every day, I believe.
Yeah, and I that seems like plenty. I can understand if Google was getting frustrated with repeated query requests, and you know, these things aren't necessarily changing super super quickly as far as company status and so on. But there's something else you mentioned there that I'm excited to get into. You know, people being able to make changes to that that database, which kind of gets into like the volunteerism of it. And what I want to talk about specifically, just to lay some groundwork, is that you did an incredible job building essentially submission forms so that, here's how I'd put it, you know, if someone goes onto the database, looks for data, but it isn't there, and they feel like trying to find it, they can then submit it and build out that resource for the next person. So how does all that work?
Absolutely. So we have the submission form, and someone can enter information that's missing from the database. And then in the Google Sheet, there's a separate tab for submissions. So it just needs to be peer reviewed just to make sure that everything looks good, that it can be implemented in the database. And then after a day, it'll show up. So that's how that process goes.
And that's why I imagine that, you know, that submission form includes like line items for sourcing, for example, so that if you did find something, you just let us know where you found it, and then we'll be able to bring that right into the fold.
Right, bingo.
That's pretty incredible. We had an incredible push earlier this year where a massive percentage of the database has been filled out from an investor relations perspective, so that we were able to build out the investor relations contact tool. You know, for those that aren't familiar with it, on ydrs.org, there's a page where you can select any company. It'll query the database automatically and pull out the contact information for their investor relations team. And then you're able to, there's a couple of queries that are pre-written, things like asking for more disclosure information about direct registration. But you could, of course, write whatever you want there. And that's something that's only made possible at scale thanks to the database. And thanks to people's contributions therein.
Yep, exactly.
So I'd love to hear more from you about, like, how do you remember that process? Because that was an incredible effort. I remember, like, a leaderboard, all kinds of things. What pops up in your mind?
Yeah, so I had helped with creating a Google script to set up a leaderboards. That's when we still had the Google Sheets, and that was a very big effort by, I'm blanking out on some of the names. I remember Whose House had a whole bunch of people to help with that. And is that what you're referring to? Because I think there's also work that Throw was working on. on the YDRS.org site.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that is what I was thinking of. But definitely anything that crosses your mind that Throw is working on too, I'd love to hear about that also if you think it's related.
Yeah, I mean, just having the search bar and the brokers and issuers and all that. I like the interface that he has set up there. Would love to be able to integrate that a little bit more with the database. Right now, it's just forked on the GitHub. It's a little bit more complex above what I understand how it works. So, would definitely love to have any builders take a look at that and see how it can be integrated.
And I believe all his code is reviewable through our GitHub as well. It's all been added on there, I believe, right?
It is, yep.
Yeah, that's terrific. I think that's a really exciting part of this whole thing, that anyone who's listening or anyone who hops in and they're like, well, I don't, I love this database idea, but I don't want to sit Googling looking for, more information about X or Y company, but maybe I'll take a look at this code base and see if I can help out there. Each person's got their skill set.
Exactly. And what's nice also nowadays with AI is you don't need to be a coder. Like, just me personally, I wouldn't consider myself as a coder. I like understand certain structures, and like I can ask ChatGPT something and it'll get pretty much 70-80% of the way there. But anyone with enough free time, even if you don't know how to code, you can just download essentially a zip file of the database, put those files into ChatGPT, ask it to add things or to integrate, and you'll get some kind of code from it. So you'll have to have a little bit of back and forth with it to test it out and see how it works. But anyone can do that, download it, test it, and then submit a pull request, and then we can review it on our side. So there's actually a whole subreddit on that. I think it's called GBT coding for people, some people who don't know how to code and just they build stuff anyway, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely a fascinating tool. And myself, I still haven't really delved into to using it in that way, but I know that you've said that it's such a helpful resource for you. It certainly sounds like it the way you describe it, but I think there could be some humbleness going on there because you've accomplished some really impressive things in my eyes just with all this. So what your workflow then? I mean, I'm curious to hear a bit more. Like, so let's say you have an idea and then you ask ChatGPT like to describe how that idea could be coded, or how does that work for you?
Yep. So even just like last night and today, I wanted to set up projects on the GitHub so that we could have one like centralized area for having all the issues that are open. And that's just me thinking with the end in mind, right? I was able to come up with first, what do you call it? Code to create prioritization labels for prioritization. So that centralized project of all issues can be sorted in a way that works. And I was able to set up two workflows that one creates the five prioritization labels, and then two that automatically adds the prioritization label to any issues that are open if no one selects any. So it's a lot of, I guess, different parts to it, but like that's kind of the workflow that I do. I asked ChatGPT, how do you set up this automation on GitHub? This is what I need from it, and this is what I want it to look like. And then it gives me a code that I can add into my pull request. And then John was able to merge that into the main branch, and it looks like it's live now. So it was pretty quick turnaround.
So to kind of sum, if I'm understanding you right, you visualize, or rather, I guess first you identify maybe not necessarily a problem, but an area that could be streamlined or perhaps better organized, and then visualize a solution. And then without necessarily knowing like the component steps of getting from where you are now to where you're going, it's more about envisioning what you where you want to be and kind of starting from there and using the AI as a resource for that. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep. That's spot on.
Very cool. Very cool. I think that probably helps you stay really open and welcoming of new information or new techniques, because you don't have any bias about, you know, oh, well, it should be done this way or that way.
Right. Exactly.
And definitely it's a boon and benefit to us that you have that kind of workflow and approach, I'd say.
Thanks.
So it sounds like the way you're describing it, I mean, this is something that a lot of other individuals, if they were so inclined, you know, they could also try to utilize these same tools and kind of that could help them contribute as well. Because that kind of moves into the next big thing I wanted to ask about, which was, I mean, we talked about how you got involved and all your ongoing contributions. And I know you've mentioned how much you appreciate what other people contribute. But what do you think would be the best way for us to further engage with, you know, individuals in the community or individuals who are visiting the site, maybe for the first time, who don't know about the online community, but try to turn more of that into active engagement? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just wanted to do a quick shout out to Bob in our community. What's really cool is he was able to create a GitHub account not too long ago. I want to say it was maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And just slowly over time, he was able to create an issue. He was able to edit some of the small changes on the repositories and just kind of highlighting all these different actions that are being done within the community. It's inspiring, and I feel like just, you know, having AI as well as part of a workflow, you know, trying to push people to help understand the repositories a little bit more, like that might be the route to go with that. And just highlighting what's been done so far is also good.
I'm interested to know more about what you mean there. So you're thinking using AI as a resource to help people understand the repositories that are on the GitHub now, you said?
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, copying and pasting some of the text that's on there and taking a look at the issues once, you know, once some of the repositories are understood, I guess, by people. Just the next logical step is to looking at the issues and seeing how it can be fixed from there. Because there's a lot of non-technical stuff there as well. You know, you don't have to know how to completely change like the file system on there, like refactoring the database. You don't need to know how to do that, you know? And that's actually something that I wanted to work on next, is to help with like labeling the technical and non-technical issues that we have open. Which kind of makes it a little lowers the barrier of entry for people to kind of pick at what they can work on, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, that's a really great idea. That seems brilliant. I hadn't even considered, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I think myself, I'm intimidated if I'm looking at something and I'm not very good at reading code. Like I know what brackets are, you know, but so having a bit more of a delineation between items that might be more plain text or more technical, as you said, could be really helpful just to help folks get engaged. And just on that subject, it's not even just the database that's on the GitHub, right? Like there's other sections of the effort that are available to folks as well if they want to contribute. Items like, you know, if you want to help to write an article about something or have suggestions to change the text on one of the web pages, on the broader site, then those are also items that can be commented on publicly and discussed and have those changes pushed through. But more organization there is a great thought. I'm right there with you on that. It could only help.
Absolutely. I feel like nothing is really off limits here. You know, if you want to take a look at the README, update the README, go for it. You know, it's an open world. You can submit a pull request. We'll take a look at it. And yeah, anyone can contribute.
And as you mentioned, we already have, you know, some community members that are kind of trickling in from the Discord that have, you know, made an account, started to leave requests or leave issues. An issue is just like anything that is missing or could be improved, right? As I understand it, it's a pretty broad topic, essentially.
Yep, exactly. A request, issue, bug, anything.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks are probably, you know, people are used to Discord. It's comfortable. We've had this, I'm not sure how long, I guess about a year and a half or probably closer to two. I'm not sure how long this big Discord's been around, but it's definitely been, it's easier to access. Everyone uses Discord just about if they're between like 15 and 35. I don't know. It's a pretty ubiquitous social media, right? And GitHub is definitely a bit more like you said, there's a barrier to entry. And so bringing that down, do you have any other ideas that would help to make things more accessible?
Off the top of my head, no, but I'll definitely post in the Discord, either in the GitHub channel or anywhere that's accessible. But if anyone else has ideas on making GitHub more accessible as well, I'm all ears. So.
Definitely. Right. I mean, me too. And you can share those in the Discord, or if you're really ambitious, make a GitHub account to share them.
There we go, Chives. Absolutely.
But just name an email, so not too bad. But dealing with a whole new UI can be tough. Absolutely. So, you know, the database has been kind of your main project, and as you've mentioned, there's incredible improvements that have come from yourself and from the rest of the community, covering more and more companies, providing more and more data. I'm curious what you see as like the end game. You know, like, where are we now? Where do you want to be one day as far as this thing goes? And do you think that it'll look the same once you get there, in terms of like whatever you might imagine it to be now, or do you just not think about it?
I feel like it's never ending. There's always going to be something to be improved upon. What I would like to see is definitely more automation, as far as we had ideas and we talked about scraping 10Ks to be able to pull record holder information and to be able to pull transfer agent information. So that's definitely one of my top goals. It's ambitious, if you ask me, but it's doable. And also wanted to see if we can, on that topic of record holders, it would be nice if there was a standardized way of having record holders, either call them record holders or there's different names for it in the 10Ks. I just want a standard way of for people to be referred in that way, so that the data can be scraped a lot easier and then offered to people.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's we've had a whole episode, I think, about that covered this a few months back, where you're exactly right. You know, for those who aren't aware or want a quick catch up, all U.S. Public companies in their 10K, which is an annual reporting, they need to report the number of record holders which their company has. A record holder is just like an individual line on their issuer ledger. So many companies might have, you know, 10 or 20 or 30, and CD&Co is just one of those. And the tricky part of that is, while the 10Ks require it to be included, there isn't any stipulation in the SEC's guidelines for that filing that says you have to phrase it this way, you have to label it this way. So it might be, you know, company has this many record holders, or it could be holders of record, or it could be shareholders of record, or any one of 25 other phrases in no particular place in the document, in no particular sentence structure, which maybe you can speak a bit more to why this is, but Grillionaire, that makes it very difficult to automate pulling the data, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're searching for that kind of data, you're typing keywords in. And if you have to type in record holders and like 5, 6, 7, 10 different variations of that, it just makes it harder to find that data. And more importantly, making sure that that data is accurate. So it's just about improving the accuracy.
Right. Ideally, it would be, some specific phrase or heading which is unique to that part of the report, and you could just search for that and know that, that's the data that you need, instead of, some phrase like shareholders that's probably uttered, dozens of times in the average report. So, a computer script that's running trying to pull this data is not going to have an easy time of it. And that's the roadblock we've run into. It's a topic for another time, but we'll definitely look to organize an SEC petition just to ask them to update that part of the submission guidelines. I feel like that's more than reasonable.
I agree, definitely.
So it sounds like there are definitely some improvements that you have in mind, but they're focused more about sustainability, it sounds like, because both these sorts of automated reviews of publicly submitted documents, what these things will help with is ensuring that the database has, I suppose, not only accurate information but timely information, right? So it sounds like as soon as a 10K or associated filing hits EDGAR, that ideally we'd be able to pull out relevant information, and that would also cut down on maintenance and volunteer input. Is that kind of the gist of why you think of that first?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even think of that, just like the timeliness of it. I feel like adding on to that as well, if you have people that are interested in certain companies, like let's say let's say you have a issuer, or you have fans of an issuer, you have shareholders that want to know, like the day after 10K drops, like how many record holders there are. Instead of having to parse through the 10K, it'll be easier to just go on the website, on the database website, and see what the number is, and then okay, that's what it is. It's you don't have to take all these extra steps, just making it easier for people. And to that point as well, I think it might raise interest more in that way, because people can share it a lot quicker, and there's just a more of a momentum. So that's definitely a good point that you make, Chives.
Well, thank you. And one other fun idea that comes to mind now that you mentioned kind of sharing it around. If we did have that kind of data reliably scraped and kept live in the broader database automatically, you could have a live leaderboard, 1 through 11,000 of the record holder numbers right there in order. We have a manual top 10 record holder leaderboard on YDRS that I put together. With some like rudimentary scraping, that was far from perfect, but it's very arduous to make anything more granular than that. But if we did have all this data, I mean, you'd be able to pull tons of data from the data in terms of, oh, I wonder how much record holder growth or loss X company has had over Y time. You start to get into things that I don't know that anyone's really looked at before.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can add on to that, creating graphs as well, and seeing that change over time visually in a much easier way. So there's always something to add and improve upon here.
So it sounds like one of the things that you'd really like, if a listener or a community member is familiar with how it could be done, is or wants to engage with an AI to try to help them do it, is finding more A resources, online primary source resources that we can query automatically to fill in more and more aspects of the database on, that consistent automatic basis. I know that you mentioned you use the SEC, to look at things like CIK and, new IPOs, delistings, et cetera. Do you, besides something like Edgar, have you, what is your perception about like, what other resources do you think might exist? Or does it need to be something coming out of a filing which will require that kind of standardized language?
We've looked at a couple different websites over the years at this point. There was one that has like a very 1990s look to it. I forget the name of it, but It doesn't have everything that we're looking for exactly. It didn't have I don't think it had transfer agents on there. Remember what it was, but either way, I feel like it'll just be easier to go to the primary source, you know, the SEC, for that kind of data.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. I think the preference would be to go to the primary source. And most of this stuff should be in different filings somewhere, even if you're pulling to, you know, if you're pulling, you can pull the address and, you know, people, members of the board, secretary, the phone numbers, the IR information is going to be in there. But again, the problem comes down to like the standardization of reporting. I think the SEC is pretty far behind, I think, of where they could be when it comes to ensuring that these reports are consistent. But that's a separate conversation, I suppose, but definitely can be a battle that the YDRS helps to fight, which is going to be useful, I think, for not just for researchers or for the SEC, but for issuers as well, because that should make it even easier to submit documentation too.
Right. And you know what? Maybe it doesn't just have to be the SEC. If we can get some companies to send us as well, the YDRS organization, their record holder numbers, it might just be easier that way. And then kind of just attack this thing from all different sides. And, you know, it's about getting data to the people as timely and accurately as possible. And if it's not the SEC, then the companies themselves would probably be the best bet.
Yeah, that's a great thought. They certainly could share that information. It's, you know, it's there's no reason that they couldn't, except that they just need to choose to, and I guess it would be a slight additional expense to pay an intern to send it over. But that I would love that. That's an awesome idea to have more direct relationships with companies that might want to ensure that the information on their page is accurate. I wonder, we'll have to see if that's possible down the line, certainly.
Awesome.
Well, I think we covered, I had a couple of, you know, a couple of key questions I wanted to ask you about that I was able to get through. And I'm curious to know, just kind of broadly, did you have anything on your mind that you wanted to bring up or bring forward, describe about your experience kind of working with all this?
Don't be afraid to be active in the community. Don't be afraid to reach out, ask for help, or to, you know, talk about something that you think can be improved upon or just what you like, you know. There's also discussions in GitHub, so if there's anything in particular that you like about the website or about any of the, you know, repositories, like it's fair game. Just kind of, you know, go put yourself out there. And you know, if you're looking at a repository that you want to learn a little bit more about, don't be afraid to either ask questions or ask ChatGPT or just kind of push yourself at this point is my message. There's a lot of opportunity here.
Right, and everyone's pretty nice, I think. You know, no one's going to be cross if you have a suggestion to improve something, just that, or you think something doesn't flow or anything like that. I mean, I know, like you, Gorillionaire, you're a humble person. You know, I think that you'd be welcoming of anything like that, and I think the same of myself or anyone else that helps to contribute. The whole idea of this effort is that it's, you know, a decentralized, you know, community first, volunteer driven, you know, collaborative, you know, retail, education organization sort of thing. It's a lot of words, but point being, everyone works together and makes this thing better. So
Definitely.
that's a
Well
great
said.
message. I love that. And we have, I mean, you mentioned Bob earlier. I always think of that guy as someone who's jumping in feet first. But there are so many others too that are active in one place, and that's great, you know. I mean, I think, what do you think, Grillionaire, about I mean, there's plenty of discussion that goes on in like the Discord server, but not very much of that the conversation really transmutes itself over to the GitHub. What do you think is that? Do you think of that as like something that should be improved or needs to be improved, or do you think it's kind of fine that way? I'm just curious for kind of your thoughts about how that kind of breaks down.
Right. So I actually had an idea of trying to integrate some of the issues. Once I'm able to have all of them centralized and labeled with, you know, technical and non-technical and by prioritization, I figured we can have that in the Discord somehow with an automation, so that at the very least, if someone's in the Discord, they don't know how to use GitHub, they'll at least have that information there. Like, okay, so that's what needs to be worked on. And then that can turn into, I wonder if this can be approved by doing so-and-so. And then they can bring that up in the Discord. And then from there, someone sees it, adds it to the GitHub. And I feel like it's going to take a slow, like, snowballing, moving effort to get to that point, but baby steps. So I think we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, that's a really terrific idea. Just kind of redirecting, you know, trying to encourage that conversation about those ongoing issues. I know we tried something like that with the task list, kind of listing off some of the items that would need to be worked on. But I think that's a similar thing where folks, you know, that's being hosted on an outside site as well. A different one for an older one from before we were doing the GitHub. And at this point, I've transitioned those tasks, like, you know, they're listed as issues on the YDRS repo now, as just things to work on. But the point, I guess my point being, you know, it's not as integrated. So I think what you're describing sounds like it would be a much more clean integration that, you know, like, I think it brings back to one of the first things you said, which is lowering that barrier to entry. And I guess even lower than, you know, if more people are on the Discord, then providing those resources to those people without them needing to load some external site just so they can look at things right away, that is going to be even better for inciting some more community input.
Right, exactly. It couldn't hurt, right?
Could not hurt. Not a chance. Well, I definitely, I know we have some live listeners here, and if you're fine with it, Grillionaire, if any one of them does want to raise their hand to come up and chat with you about anything, I'd love to open it up for that. And in the meantime, if anything else on your mind, just kind of let it fly, you know?
Yeah, if anyone wants to ask any questions, or if anyone wants to talk, or wants to learn about anything, I'm here. Yeah, anything at all. I'm an open book.
And pretty consistently so. Like, folks can I know your DMs are open. And if someone did want to, you know, was shy but wanted to learn but didn't want to learn right now, then they can, you know, how can the folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, so my handle on the server is Grillionaire2. You can also find me on @TripleJuicebox. Yeah, either one works. You can message me on here, on Discord, whatever you feel comfortable with.
Great. Well, looks like John joined up as a speaker. How are you doing there, John?
Doing absolutely stellar. It cuts out for a second when you join. Chives, is he okay with first name?
Yeah, I'm okay with James. That works for me too.
Okay. Do you prefer James, or if you prefer something, by all means.
I don't have any preference. Whatever you feel comfortable with, James works for me.
Well, you have been doing absolutely stellar, James. I know you lightly mentioned that workflow integration that you just got live on the GitHub profile repo today to centralize in a decentralized way the process for managing the backend scripts that run after there are like change requests or new improvements or just community members coming in. And that was the process you went through was so inspirational to hear how you designed that. You know, it came out of just your own idea and you're able to implement it without, I mean, I'm looking at all the chats across all the platforms, and it's my understanding that you just kind of did it Yeah, added the code. I mean, we started this morning not knowing how to do this. I was like, I'm not sure if that's a thing. And within hours, this was something already up and ready. And, I remember personally circling back to you and saying, wait, maybe this might be a good thing. And by the time I'd done that, you hit me with that PR. You're like, oh, I already did this. It's unbelievable, James. I was like, oh my gosh, you're a genius.
Thank you. I couldn't believe that it, like, gave me exactly what I was looking for. Like, sometimes it's impressive what the internet has been able to offer all of us. You know, it's incredible. I'm not gonna lie. And that's the thing. What I'm a regular guy. I'm like anybody. Like it. When I say I don't know how to code, like I've worked in IT. Like I understand certain structures and stuff, but if I had no internet access and I had to sit down, pencil and paper, I wouldn't be able to do it. But like I said, I have the end in mind, right? So if just typing in what I need, what I'm looking for, and if I know some of the pitfalls, like I can say, don't do this. This is how I want it done, and then I'll get what I need. 'Cause like that's how I see being productive. But yeah, I'm just a regular guy like anybody here. So
Wow.
anyone can do this.
Man, I'm getting excited. See, I actually haven't had a chance to, I haven't looked at the consolidation of issues quite yet. I heard about it. I saw those posts in Discord, but I didn't have a chance to read them. So I think that's so wonderful. And, to have John, flummoxed with, just amazed with what you were able to accomplish. Just speaks to it even more. I mean, so thank you for, having the tenacity to do that, because I think that's an important part of this too. It's not just a, oh, this would be cool, but I don't know how to do it. It's instead, oh, this would be cool, I don't know how to do it, but let's find out.
Right. You just got to be curious at the end of the day.
And speaking of curiosity and the web in general, I think I heard earlier that there was like a website from the 1990s that had some sort of primary materials. Am I on the right track there? What was that about? That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think Chives might have brought it up once or twice, but it's like very boxy looking. It almost looks like a Windows 98 kind of website. Chives, do you
Yeah,
remember what that website was?
I'll click around a bit here to see if I can find it. But John, to fill you in on the background there, essentially, when we were looking for any kind of databases that were in the vein of what we were trying to do, we were looking all over, and we found, as I've mentioned, a couple that were, behind paywalls. And there was one that wasn't. That was it wasn't quite as robust as what we were thinking of. And I think it's the one John is, that James is talking about here. But the site itself was, I mean, we had, as I recall, a lot of the data that it did have, we already had it. But it was neat in that it was similar to what we were trying to do. But it was, as he has mentioned, boxy and hadn't been updated in quite a while. Like it wasn't, there was like a disclaimer box on the homepage that was like, this is not actively maintained. This is like as of X date, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yep.
I feel bad that I can't remember because it was very cool. And I sent emails to there was a contact page and I sent out emails, but, I did not hear back from the gentleman that was running it. I'm sure he would have liked to hear what we were trying to do. But and I'll see if I can find it.
So it sounds like the conundrum there was that it just sort of didn't stay alive or up to the times, and certainly wasn't something that could easily be improved by you as someone who came to that page.
Exactly. Yeah. And like Chives mentioned, most of the stuff we already had in our database anyway. So
Oh, okay.
yeah. And the thing is, like, that's the closest I feel like that what we could find to a centralized database of what we're trying to build here. So It's no, it, ours was light years ahead of what they
I mean, what you've done is just amazing, James. It is wizardry in every form. And from someone who wouldn't consider himself a coder. Really, quite.
I'm really
quite
not, John. I think, though, it might be private, the project. I don't know if you, when you have a chance, do you mind making that public, the tracker?
Yeah, I noticed that. I didn't know if that was a choice on purpose or not. I'll change it now.
Cool. Thank you.
Of course.
I'll have to see. Now you've got me curious to find that again. So I'll have to. I don't want to click around because I'm not listening to you guys. I'm just clicking around and I'm going to stop doing that now. But I will find it later. I definitely, I've got it somewhere. But in any case, yeah, it's. Because anyone out there, like that individual whose name I also forget, but point being, right, like clearly they were driven by the same kind of thing. And I'm sure there are other efforts out there that similarly are driven. And it'd be wonderful to bring more of that into the fold and try to create something definitive, right? Because that's kind of what would be so wonderful about the, like the data scraping, for example, if that were made to be possible, you can create this, you know, continued resource that stays up to date without the need for ongoing maintenance, which obviously was the problem that, you know, this other site had run into. Because it's a monumental task, you know, obviously. So any efforts that we can figure out to make that more sustainable, and that's really, really key. And then we can focus on the accessibility, I suppose, after that. Well, before that, in the sense, because we can't actually accomplish some of these scraping tools when the SEC does not enforce consistent filing requirements, but one problem begets another.
That's what the petition repo area is for.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I've got my note here to go in and start that issue under that repo. Because Grilling has mentioned it before, but then I forgot. So I'll be doing that right after this.
Well, I personally know from talking with so many CFOs that they use that data internally, and they even pay sometimes five or more figures to get the record holder NOBO info from Broadridge. And it's valuable for some reason. I mean, they pay a lot of money for it. So clearly it's got some value to them as a company. And of course, they all unanimously appreciate the nuanced data that they get from knowing the names and addresses of the registered holders. Because as we've discussed before, it just helps you make better business decisions when you learn where your investors are and you can kind of infer from that where your clients are and make strategic choices, as we've talked before. And to think that even just some basic, primitive, high-level numbers here, like I talk to CFOs and they routinely track who their top record holders are, and they try as best they can with some of the anonymized information they get to figure out if such and such corporate decision led to such and such institution, you know, selling shares or buying shares. And you can tell that based on their holdings. And it helps them make management decisions because not every shareholder is going to submit a proposal. Not every shareholder is going to comment on a meeting. Not everyone's going to be involved very intimately. But this basic financial data, like number of registered holders for these companies, and there's no reason similarly for investors everywhere. It is a meaningful tool to track progress, to track growth, and to track interest amongst investors as a whole. That certainly seems lacking in so many regards.
Agreed.
I think the same logic applies to the investor side too. You know, if you're looking to get involved with something and you see that you know, maybe one company has this a plunge in its, you know, record holder numbers all of a sudden after being, you know, steady for a while, or, you know, this or that. I mean, you can make some inferences. Now, probably looking at the monetary fundamentals of the company are going to be more relevant for you in that situation, but that could be still, anyone's going to make their own decision with their own data set and value it in the way that they want to. And providing more data in that way is only going to be helpful. And it's unfortunate that, you know, again, a lot of this stuff is technically public data. Like, you could get it if you trawled through, you know, these 90 page filings. Maybe if you did, 10 a day, then you could maybe catch up by the time you had to restart because it's the next year again. But so, like, I don't think that's feasible. And just making that easier for investors is something that, I mean, really the SEC should be doing, but that's probably, that's too big an ask, I guess. So I love that we're able to talk about trying to provide these resources. And it's Grillionaire, James Grillionaire over here that makes it possible from the start. Because I can't speak to getting linked to the project from the start. I remember that it was 6 Days who had sent it over to me, and he was like, "Oh, look what this guy's working on! Isn't this amazing?" I'm like, "Yeah, this is amazing. We got to get this guy on board. We got to talk to this guy."
Yes, another stellar contributor, and as a listener for this episode, I was so curious as to where this background came from, James. I mean, I didn't even understand all this in the first place to start on such a momentous endeavor.
Yeah, I like to think big, you know. Sometimes too ambitious for my own good. Ooh. But that's what we're all here for, right?
That's like a non-answer. I mean, but hey, if you want us to eat humble pie, it's okay. But yeah, I'm curious too. Like, I mean, what actually transpired for you to think? I know you said at the very beginning, "Oh, I started with just a handful of companies," but even that was a big undertaking. You said you were working on it on your vacation.
Yeah,
I felt like there was more I could do, more I can contribute, and just kind of seeing the way that, you know, originally with GameStop, like just the price going down and it going back up. And it's just, it was a wild ride for me. And I, like I said, I just wanted to kind of contribute in my own way. And that's how I felt that I could best do it. So that's kind of what inspired me to do it.
Wow. It really sounds like you've built all these skill sets just from the ground up through uncovering this unique resource, which is inspirational. Just incredible, James.
Thank you.
Again, I want to reiterate, you know, if anyone else does have any questions about the database or about any of the kind of tools that have, that James has kind of developed for himself, just raise your hand and we'd be happy to try to get you up to speak. Since we had some other folks join in. Yeah, well, it's been a terrific conversation. Just learning a bit more about your process and being able to share that with our community here, and thinking about ways that we can always improve. I mean, as you had mentioned, I think several times, there's it's just a never nonstop journey of improvement and increasing the fidelity of these tools.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
kidding me? Thanks for being here, man.
Yeah. Making some incredible contributions, James, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I really appreciate it. Just so much. Love having folks like you. Just love knowing folks like you, man. It's great. Do you have any like closing thoughts or anything like that? Because I think looks like folks are pretty well satisfied. And we do actually have a speaker. Hold on, I'm inviting them up. It's Oxytocin.
Hey, how's it going? Do we know what the current percentage ownership is in ComputerShare?
Oh, that's a great question.
Are you referring to like any specific company or?
I feel like the DRS movement kind of started with GameStop, so I was referring to GME, but there are companies that use ComputerShare other than that. It's just, you know, they were at 25% at one point. So that's why I just figured I'd use them as a.
I gotcha. GME is going to be closer to 18% now at last reported following the new stock issuance. It's just so drawing out of a larger denominator.
Still got to be happy about $4.8 billion in cash on hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Book value just keeps going up. Did you have any question about the YDRS database?
I'm not familiar with the database. I just kind of joined the space, so I didn't hear what was going on before. May listen to the recording, though.
Oh, gotcha. Well, you can check it out over at ydrs.org, but essentially the database is seeking to provide primary source information about every publicly traded company, anything that you would need to, for example, direct register your stock in that company or reach out to them with a shareholder proposal or submit other information, review company documents, etc. And Grillionaire here is one of the key arbiters and builders of that resource.
That sounds like a great resource to have for the retail investor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, well, hey, check it out. And welcome, Burr, too. How are you doing today, Burr?
Good, Chives. How are you doing?
Oh, yeah, doing great.
No, hey, congratulations on the repository. You know, one of the biggest challenges we've had privately, and you don't know what we've been up to, but a few of the people on the call do, is having the AI read different sets of data. Now, I don't know if you can get the SEC to standardize it. I don't know if it's their jurisdiction, but one of the workarounds that we've came up with was just self-issuance, and then who your shareholders are, why or why not they may sell. Bridging the gap between legacy systems into open source DeFi systems on maybe a centralized output. If you solve that, you have something. We quit looking into it because trying to read different auditing statements, different tax returns. I mean, tax returns are kind of easy. Those are IRS standard. But yes, how they report. Yeah, if you figure that out, man, you got something pretty unique.
Yeah, definitely something to look into. They gotta make an issue for that.
Yeah, seriously. That's just, I didn't mean to take it away from you, James. That's a tremendous thing for an issue. How did that come to mind for you?
You mean for Burr, right? Or
I mean for you, James, because I'm completely with you. They they can mandate the reporting standards, and obviously that's what they do for the annual reports and everything. And they kind of force everything into XBRL, which is their formatting language that they use across the financial industry and across EDGAR for displaying all this. And also for context, and I'll throw it back to you, James, is that the annual reports have to be hosted on somewhere other than EDGAR, and normally it's the transfer agent that does that. And that's just a law.
But James, you know, to be a little bit more specific, John, like, you know, when we get, you know, IRS, you know, tax documents, raw tax documents are kind of easy. Those are all standard. But when you get audited statements, or you have to compare, or having a unified system that's based on AI that can read a Chase statement versus a Bank of America statement, they all don't format. So there is a ton of nuances to, you know, how you interpret or how much you would let the computers make decisions for you. Now, I don't know if you can, you know, convince the SEC to standardize like third party, you know, audited financial returns. But yeah, I mean, the data is available, but how you get the computers to read it efficiently, that is unique.
You know, maybe fine tuning an AI with just a whole bunch of like randomly selected forms that have the information on them, and then having like a YDRS AI could potentially do it, but that would definitely be a big undertaking.
I mean, James, I'm just saying this because we're not stuck in the same part you are, but we've come across the same issue. You know, when is tech enough? You're just trying to be a repository and, you know, quick search, you know, there's thousands of publicly traded equities. It would be a big undertaking, but a standardized issuer from the jump through the transfer agent, John, could help standardize the process, at least going forward.
Right. I see what you're saying. Definitely. Yeah. If you want to speak a little bit more on that, John.
I think Chaz might be the master of the LLM space, but I completely agree with you. I'm of the mindset that, you know, if society moves more towards these blockchain technologies, then a lot of this financial reporting is going to get a whole lot easier because you can, I think you can basically eliminate hundreds of thousands in accounting expenses by just, I mean, if you have a public ledger with an account for a company and you can very transparently see everything that's happening and run a script on that and classify it, I think it'll just be a whole lot easier when the financial system's a little more transparent than trusting someone's bank statement.
Well, John, I agree, but there's four main auditing firms that pretty much run the entire public discourse. You'd almost have to get them to agree in changing their internal reporting policies and procedures. But from the jump, with the right transfer agent, or at that point of self-issuance, or the immutable nature of potentially blockchain future transactions, I think that becomes an easy lift. I mean, you see it in other industries, right? This is not completely apropos. But like, you know, when they rolled out Secure Act, you know, the government says, hey, we want this uniform standard. And then all the back office operations, like, it's impossible to achieve this on your timetable. Like, it just can't happen. You know, like, no one disagrees with the intent, the goals, the logic, but repapering millions and millions and millions of accounts, you know, that's brute force. There's no AI.
Yeah.
I had the honor at one point of having John walk me through his transfer agent design a few years back. So I'm actually honored to see you again, John. It was a pleasant part of the adventure. But I think there's something to consider here, that there's two forms of ownership, and they go by two technical different rules. The institutionals, when they have an equity or an asset and they issue something, how do you consider keeping track of in what ways it's swapped and shared? Because I feel like many institutions can play on things, but trying to derive where the ownership comes from when it's hidden from retail and this is a regulator base, like they don't let us know everything. But I think it's something to be considered, because then when you go try to figure out, okay, Wells Fargo is playing 500,000 calls on B of A, but they don't own any shares, and you really have to go through filings to look at all of this, you know? So I agree with you, Burr. I think that if there's a way to feed the template of the filings through to an LLM, they can auto-parse the information and keep track of the ownership and how it's shared. But most of the swaps have been exempt from reporting for public duty for a long time, 2013 on the minimum. You know, Dodd-Frank came in and they exempted those for another 10 years. SEC did make some moves so that security-based swaps are shown in the 13Fs of certain funds, but it's not market spread. Like, we can't just go through the filings and figure out who owns what. It's only certain mutual funds that are showing them, and ETFs don't seem to be. So I figured just ask if there's an idea on how to approach the differentiation between retail positions, where those go, and then at the same time institutional ownership, where they're playing things that are, you know, borrowed but not yet purchased.
Well, broadly, always, and welcome to the talk, by the way. But I think the conversation here is wholly focused on the retail ownership side, and you're absolutely right that there's, you know, obviously, beneficial ownership and many delineations therein that go unreported. But unfortunately, for that reason, it's not feasible using the resources that we have, regardless of the fidelity of the LLM model, to reliably develop any kind of meaningful, up-to-date resource about how that ownership is actually, spread out. So hopefully that's something that can change one day with better regulatory reporting metrics or more granular access to key data from retail. But at the moment, I mean, and please, anyone pop in if you disagree with me, but I don't think it's a realistic problem to try to solve, unfortunately.
Well, I know that there's been slight, and it's hard for me to trust Gensler because I haven't seen enough action to go, okay, it's a white knight. But there have been slight modifications to the way that the shares were reported. As long as they're security-based, which is SEC jurisdiction, not commodities or any of these other complicated things. But in terms of shares, it was really interesting for me to really look at, I feel like the regulatory is the only thing in the way of being able to put together the full math of this. But I'd done a lot of research into swaps because they became really interesting. Just figuring how they share certain mathematics of their accounts with other accounts. A lot of it had to do with Burry and just figuring out what the hell he was talking about. But I feel like there's a lot to be said in the simple idea of that swaps play a huge role in institutional FTDs. And although retail ownership plays a role as well, I feel like there's hidden holes in the market that not just validify, that's the wrong word, the reason to hold something in a long term. Like, I'm a paper holder, but like if I could, I'd get paper certs, they're in a safe, I understand it. But I feel like until these loopholes are fixed and we can truly see which exploits are done on the finance market, it's really that. I feel like most people just need to pressure so that we do get regulatory to get the understanding. You know, we're so stuck in an unfair market.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Retail needs to use the tools that they have in order to solicit actual change. Things like submitting, SEC petitions to force new discussion on the books is, these are really important tools. Leaving comments, for your companies that you care about, if you want them to disclose more information, submit proposals, et cetera. So I think you're making a great point, but I do kind of want to draw things back to the key topic at hand here, which is regarding the YDRS database. You know, if anyone has any questions for Grillionaire about that before we get too far afield.
If I'm detracting, I'll just drop back down. I didn't mean to.
No, it's all right. Well, I just wanted to make sure you knew the broader context here. The database is just intended It's a resource on ydrs.org as a collection of empirical, public, you know, primary source information collated into a single place, you know, referring to the 10,000 plus publicly traded companies, and which we're so proud to be building, and that's the key function of the of this year. But please, you know, any thoughts about that? Yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, that was a wonderful recap. I think always I'll bookend it or try my best. Like, if you're thinking new securities where it's the primary market, and you're not talking complex derivatives or ETFs or how they package, bundle, tranche, you know, I think we're still at phase one of just tracking the basic blocking of tackling of, you know, individual positions. When you try to put a swap or mutual fund or ETF, that's, I think, a database deviation that is probably a little bit ahead of where I think everyone else is. But right idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I had made a program at one point where essentially it's an SEC archiver. The Edgar only goes back to 01, but I noticed their master archives go back to 93. So I made a script in Python to grab all the filings. That way I could just look at underwritings. That was my perspective. And what I learned is technically if you download Citigroup and then just look for basket, you kind of are just skipping all the naysay and you go right to the offerings that are manipulated in the same way that bonds or stocks or derivatives, the same way they manipulate all of them. It's at an offering source. It's an instrument that gets manipulated. So that was my whole thinking. I just didn't know the depth of what you guys were tracking. That's all. I appreciate you laying for me up too.
Of course. Yeah. No problem at all. And that sounds really impressive. That wonderful tool that you've built there. And maybe if you have an ability, you could drop a link. I don't know if you have that listed publicly anywhere or like the code for that, but I'm sure that we'd love to be able to take a look and maybe incorporate some of that information from the filings prior to Edgar, because that could be handy.
Yeah, I feel like through the underwritings, when you look at a lot of company histories, essentially, the underwriters approach the company CEOs or the owners, and they're like, hey, we got this idea. It's most of the time the underwriter's idea of where acquisitions and mergers come into play. Really interesting to look at that under level of things. So that was my whole perspective. I feel like at that level, that's where we get to understand not just the offerings, but the ultimate timeline of what the banksters are doing in our markets, you know?
But always, too, there's a component of that's like the literal definition of how investment bankers get paid, right? Like, you get paid on transactional work, right?
So I love you, Burr, so much. Oh, fuck, you're so on point.
but no, that's the nature, right? I talk to investment banks every day. I got this client, I got this, this is what we like to do, the covenants of their existing senior note holder are this, like, can we take them out? Where do we sit in the lien position? There is some old school, like, deal making that takes place. Like, the AI, and this is, I think, some of the other themes that we've been wrestling with is, you know, the AI can help with the math. It can help with the understanding. It can help with a lot, but it can't make a deal happen. So the underwriters play a critical role. Now, I'm still trying to get up to speed on how underwriting from, you know, Citigroup or something 20 years ago affects today's markets. And then it's very complicated. So you gotta go to DTCC. Like in the new world, I think what we're talking about always is like, you know, Burr has 10 million shares. Potentially we can self-issue a partner with a transfer agent and have a decentralized exchange. So I understand that process. What I wouldn't understand is how you have derivatives built off that on a blockchain-based system. But yeah, I mean, that's what investment bankers do. They work the phones. That's why GameStop in this example.
I mean, honestly, it makes me think of just doing a non-fungible token per the singular instrument that has a limited amount. Now, if you're doing an offering or something after or reducing share price, that might get kind of complicated. But I feel like this is the purpose of fungible versus non-fungible, because the moment it's offered and directly linked to a real-time asset, which would be your stock, then yeah. But how the coding of you linking NYSE to our future shit? Good luck. I don't think it's designed to.
I've been pretty clear. I don't think that's possible. But if you're trying to build a database on the existing participants, is where we're at right now. But no, I completely agree with that.
I think that we're looking at a transition as a whole, where we're going from the current storage system of hard drives to where essentially we just need the regulators to update their full storage. And even if there's things that are exempt from reporting, how are you going to tell us that we can't find it? Everything is going to need to be blockchained. And I think when this occurs, exemptions become an interesting thing because they still have to have it on a blockchain backed record.
But if it's on blockchain, not to be an idiot, and I think you're a very smart guy, but then you don't need the extra reporting because it's on chain, right? If someone's, for example, right?
But to me, it's not about the reporting. It's about the exemptions, because in the exemptions are legalities which allow the flaws. Now, I'm not going to say they're illegal, because everything is legal, but something should not exist. That's why we're here, you know?
But the whole point of a transparent public ledgering system is that the market won't allow it to exist. Like, if you're a hedge fund and you want to buy, and I'm just going to say Burr because it's my name and I don't want to say anyone else's name. But if we put 2 million shares of 10 million available and someone's trying to acquire a million shares to short, we're going to know about it almost in real time. Like, what other reporting through an Edgar system would make that more transparent after, you know, like Edgar's after the fact reporting, right? Everyone has roughly 90 days, 45 days to get audited statements into Edgar. The SEC's job is not to make sure it's accurate. It's just to make sure it's there. Like, so what role are we truly asking the SEC?
Touche on that. The amount of filings I went through that had incorrect data or just complete misreporting errors is astounding.
Well, I would go back and say that's the auditor's job, the CPA's firm, and I think they're liable. You know, the SEC is not certifying anything that you're reporting, right? Like, you can't sue the SEC because Nike had an error in their audit.
I feel like I'm detracting the convo. I did not mean to misdirect at all. So I'm going to go back to listener. Sorry, I'm just one of the internet anons. I appreciate you guys, especially for letting me ask my few questions. I'll totally let you guys get back on track, okay?
Well, hey, don't feel too bad about it. And feel free to stop by again anytime. We do these every week. Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating conversation, I'd say, just thinking about how we can incorporate more tracking, more data. But yeah, to bring it all back to what the database project is currently focused on, it's trying to remain, you know, items that are empirical and accessible, a matter of public record, but providing them in a coherent and organized way, so that someone can just in a couple of keystrokes find exactly what they are looking for. And there's plenty of information there, you know, about 10,000 plus companies already, but you know, it's the scaling that does become the difficulty. I think that's what Burr, you were really talking about there, in terms of how do we realistically reach in to the resources that the SEC provides and get from there, you know, all this additional information. It's difficult, but something that's constantly trying to improve. And Grillionaire, you know, you've been quiet a while. Kind of, what are your thoughts to wrap it back to the main subject here?
Yeah. So, if there's any like specific things that you think can be added to the database itself, even if they're like large ambitious projects, you can always open up an issue on GitHub. Or at least take a look and see what's open there so far. And if you have any ideas to improve that, I would love to hear that as well.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, a lot of, you know, anyone who's maybe unfamiliar with the efforts, you know, everything is listed on there. And, you know, I don't mean to to shoot down any great ideas. If something is possible to track, then and someone is interested to help us track it, and it could be of material importance to retail investors, then we want to get that information on there, certainly.
Well, Chives, just like you would do for any kind of IPS, an investment policy statement or whatever, for the code to work, the AI to work, the data gathering to work, you know, someone, the Discord, the group, a vote, whatever, would have to, you know, say, this is what we think are the most important metrics. Like, you got to define what your risk is. You got to be able to define what you're actually searching for and if that's important to your thesis. Now, if you're trying to completely open market, that sounds like a different kind of project. But no, if you knew the question ahead of time, then I think it becomes a slightly digestible output.
Yeah, that's a great thought. To give some context, kind of in the realm of what you just described, you know, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that the database could do. I'll give two quick examples. One I brought up briefly earlier. We wanted to build an investor relations contact tool on YDRS so that if you wanted to reach out to a company, you could do it in, you know, a couple of clicks. You know, type the ticker, hit a button, and it would open up with a mail to command. You know, so all your information is still private, but you can reach out to the IR of any company that way. And so we had that idea first and then decided, okay, well, that means we'll have to gather the investor relations contact information of every public company in order to facilitate that tool working, which, and we've got something like 70 or 80% of that data filled in at this time. And then similarly, when thinking about, you know, we're currently trying to build DRS guides for, you know, if you wanted to seek direct ownership for any stock, I have it so that it can spit out a tool, kind of like a generated PDF that would have specific instructions for that broker and for that company and for that transfer agent, more specifically, because there are nuances, especially if you're an overseas investor. And that requires a ton of different information, information about the transfer agent, about the broker, where they're located, what their policies are, the fees, all kinds of things. But that's probably 10 or 12 different variables that we, incorporated into the database, preemptively knowing that they'd be useful in that kind of tool, which is still under development. So definitely we do that. But other things, you know, we just try to incorporate because they seem to make sense. Curlionaire, I'm curious for your thoughts kind of on first perspective there, like a top-down approach. Do you think that is the most helpful?
Yeah, I think that would definitely be helpful. And like you said, mentioning the having the investor relations so that people can reach out directly to them would be a useful kind of tool to at least get one step in the direction of what we're looking to do here. Or like I mentioned in the beginning, you know, they got to go step by step, and then that turns into a snowball effect. So. But it's good to have like the end in mind in that respect. So I do appreciate this conversation for sure.
Yeah, definitely been a good one. I'm glad folks had the chance to, you know, put a voice to the name, or at least put a name to the concept. Because although you've been such an integral part of developing the resource, I don't know how many people know it, so I'm glad to get the chance to gloat about how wonderful it is to work with you.
I appreciate it, Chimes.
James, it's a labor of love. I'm going to echo everything he said, but keep hustling, keep grinding. What you're doing is extremely important, and I think the future applications are probably beyond than what today's current uses could potentially be.
Thank you. And, you know, it's always about improving and about the next thing. So once we're able to, you know, get to the point where we're looking at now, then we can figure out what the next steps are. So definitely appreciate, you know, dreaming big here.
Dreaming big, that's an understatement, James. It's really it's quite unbelievable. I mean, as someone used to staring at black and white 10K HTML files, it's leagues ahead and really something quite special.
Now, I'll echo that, John. As someone that has to read audited statements all the time just to read the footnotes and the things that are, like, pertinent, right? Like the plus and minuses are kind of easy, but the devil's in the details. So anything that can take the boring work out of, you know, due diligence, or that Warren Buffett or Charlie Munger, you know, or philosophy of just to read everything would go a long way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point too. This can be so important because it frees up the mental equity of someone who might be researching something else. And, you know, the database is a stepping stone, but if it saves them a bunch of time and effort, leaving them with more energy to turn over the rock they were trying to turn over initially, that's even better for everybody too.
This is super technical, but, you know, James, if you're bored, you know, too, like in so many of the retail spaces I participate in, people spend a ton of time comparing apples and oranges. You know, it's very tough to compare two competing asset classes and find a correlation. You know, a lot of people get into, you know, if this is what the book says or this is what that says without having the industry historical averages, right? Like, You can't compare a hospital system, a hospital company, a manufacturer to, you know, an automotive supplier. You can't compare that to a grocery or restaurant. You can't compare that to the small business sector. So, you know, having, and I think this is all mostly publicly available too, but like a scorecard system of like, here's what the industry is doing, right? Here's maybe 1,000 competitors of what this very specific hotel company is doing versus what you're doing in the same industry. You know, having data on a tier one, you know, international supply manufacturer has no meaningful benefit to compare it with to, you know, an automotive, you know, I'm sorry, I said that already, has no comparative, you know, benefit to any other industry. So the numbers and the outputs also have to be relative to industry standards, I would say.
Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds like it would be beneficial to have some kind of filtering in that sense by industry. Is that kind of where you're getting at?
Yeah, I think that'd be hyper specific. Yeah, I think that is extremely relevant because multiples are different, tax is different, accounting is different, a test audit is different, deferring income is different. You know, so you want to make sure what you're comparing is at least relevant to the industry and at least a handful of deals that have taken place. Like the MLS system for houses on your block almost, right? Like,
right. And that actually, maybe we can make a column for that at some point as well to filter out from the database, like what industry each company is in, and then from there, people can kind of compare them as needed.
Well, you can do that right off the tax return through Edgar, right? Because they each have their industry codes, they have their sub IDs. That should be relatively straightforward.
It's a great idea, huh?
And that's uniform, right? That's not an auditor's opinion, right? Like, you know, the auditor's report from Deloitte will be different than Ernst Young, will be different from, you know, Anderson and Anderson. But no, the true tax filing will have their sub industry ID on it as well.
I'm going to have to make an issue for that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's why we do these spaces. We throw out ideas and help each other, right?
Oh, yeah. Love it.
That's it. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, really, that's emblematic of what it's all about. You know, talking through these different things. It's a collaborative effort to keep improving the resources and make sure they're continually publicly available to anyone who might need them, and to empower anyone who does want to contribute, just like what Burr and James are just describing doing, to make sure that you're able to do that as well. So love that. A little microcosm of what it's all about right there.
Well, I mean, this is what we're competing against, right? You're competing against centralized databases. And I don't want to steal your thunder, Chives, but yeah, if you told me the first digit of your social security number, I can probably tell you at least what region, maybe the state you're from. And it's the same with EIN and how they have their internal codes for the type of industry that they're in. I think that'd be an easy one to replicate.
All right. Well, great stuff, guys. John, sorry, were you about to say something?
We're always coming in to drop some knowledge on everyone. And James, completely the same. Likewise, it's great to hear some of your background in the space. Wow.
Thanks, John.
Of course. And what a perfect community roundup that we had after the interview here to have as the first episode under the YDRSX.org account. Big shout out to Chias for saying that out. I think it's going to be it's just a lot easier to uncover, and what a perfect conversation to kick it off with, as it is now being between everyone in the community. And of course, spearheaded by Chives' unwavering dedication. And James' grateful participation, and everyone else that is here.
Thanks, everyone.
Oh yeah. Hey, no, thank you guys. I mean, I love when we all thank each other. But that's a great point. Yeah, I love being on the YDRS account here. A very thematic. I think to have the database conversation be the first one, and we'll look forward to homogenizing the way the Taking Stock is hosted from here on out so that it's easier for folks to engage with. I think that's really crucial, and I'm glad that that we now have this ability. Thank you for updating. Thank you for the X updates. Because I'm hosting it on desktop. Yeah, I think it was a really productive conversation. But definitely been going on for a while. James, how are you feeling? Anything else that you think that you'd want to cover? Should we think about starting to wrap it up?
Yeah, I think it's about time.
About time? Okay. Well, John's already pretty much handled our closing statements, making sure everyone knows how much everyone appreciates everyone else. So I think we're good there. No, we're not. I'm just kidding. I'll say again, yeah, thanks, James, for taking the time, not only to this afternoon, but every day that you contribute to this effort. I know that you've been plugging away. It's been like years that we've been working together, and it's been a joy. So thank you from me and from the millions of retail investors who don't know yet how valuable they're going to find your work.
Appreciate it. And honestly, just try to push yourselves to be the best that you can. Be excellent to each other. That's how I want to send it off.
There you go. Perfect. All right, have a great rest of the day, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Take care.